Okay, so it is June 16th, 2018, and we're going to be looking at numbers 13 and numbers 14 up to verse 10, and then the Haftarah is Joshua 2. And ironically, this is what we did last week for the regular Parashah. It's interesting. Almost. It's a little different, but
it's amazing how we keep tripping over. The two are tripping over each other.
Right. And now
today's
we're
coming. Today's Korach.
Yeah.
I mean, downstairs.
Yeah, it's kind of like Haley's comment.
Yeah.
So, Lord, thank you for bringing us once again here to Narkey Street. Thank you that we get to read your word. Thank you for each person here this morning and everyone who's listening, that we're part of a community of believers, of followers of you, and your spirit is with us when two or three are gathered in your name. And so we just ask that you would speak to us now and guide us. In your name we pray.
Amen.
So, without further ado, let's go around and read numbers 13 and the first 10 verses of 14.
And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Send men to spy out the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the children of Israel. From each tribe of their fathers you shall send a man, every one a leader among them." So Moses sent them from the wilderness of Paran, according to the command of the Lord, all of them men who were heads of the children of Israel. Now these were their names: from the tribe of Reuben, Shammua, the son of Zakur; from the tribe of Simeon, Shaphat, the son of Hori; from the tribe of Judah, Caleb, the son of Jephunneh; from the tribe of Issachar, Igal, the son of Joseph; from the tribe of Ephraim, Hoshea, the son of Nun; from the tribe of Benjamin, Palti, the son of Raphu; from the tribe of Zebulun, Gadiel, the son of Sodi; from the tribe of Joseph, that is the tribe of Manasseh, Gadi, the son of Susi; from the tribe of Dan, Amiel, the son of Gamali; from the tribe of Asher, Sepher, the son of Michael; from the tribe of Naphtali, Nahbi, the son of Bopsi, I think; from the tribe of Gad, Geuel, the son of Machi. These are the names of the men whom Moses sent to spy out the land. And Moses called Hoshea, the son of Nun, Joshua.
When Moses sent them to explore Canaan, he said, "Go up through the Negev and on into the hill country. See what the land is like and whether the people who live there are strong or weak, few or many. What kind of land do they live in? Is it good or bad? What kind of towns do they live in? Are they unwalled or fortified? How is the soil? Is it fertile or poor? Are there trees on it or not? Do your best to bring back some of the fruit of the land." It was the season for the first ripe grapes.
So they went up and explored the land from the desert of Sin, all as far as Rehov, to what label, Hamat. They went up through the Negev and came to Hebron, where Achiman, Shechai, and Talmai, the descendants of Anak, lived. Hebron had been built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. When they reached the valley of Eshkol, they cut off a branch bearing a single cluster of grapes. Two of them carried it on a pole between them, along with some pomegranates and figs. That place was called the Valley of Eshkol because of the cluster of grapes the Israelites cut off there. At the end of 40 days, they returned from exploring the land.
And they came to Moses and Aaron and to all the congregation of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. They brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him, "We came to the land to which you sent us. It flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. However, the people who dwell in the land are strong, and the cities are fortified and very large. And besides, we saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the Negev. the Hittites, the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the hill country, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and along the Jordan.
And Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it." But the men who had gone up with him said, "We're not able to go up against the people, for they're stronger than we." And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land which they'd spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people whom we saw it are men of great stature." Then we saw the giants, the descendants of Anak, came from the giants, and we were like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight.
That night, all the people of the community raised their voices and wept aloud. All the Israelites grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and the whole assembly said to them, "If only we had died in Egypt or in this desert. Why is the Lord bringing us to this land only to let us fall by the sword? Our wives and children will be taken as plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to go back to Egypt?" And they said to each other, "We should choose a leader and go back to Egypt." Then Moses and Aaron fell face down in front of the whole Israelite assembly gathered there, Joshua son of Nun and Caleb son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had explored the land, tore their clothes and said to the entire Israelite assembly, "The land we passed through and explored is exceedingly good. If the Lord is pleased with us, he will lead us into that land, a land flowing with milk and honey, and will give it to us. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not be afraid of the people of the land, because we will swallow them up. Their protection is gone, but the Lord is with us. Do not be afraid of them."
In verse 10,
"But the whole assembly talked about stoning them. Then the glory of the Lord appeared at the tent of meeting to all the Israelites. The Lord said to Moses, 'How long will these people treat me in contempt? How long will they refuse to believe me, in spite of all the miracles and miraculous signs I have performed among them?'"
Oh, that's it. Sorry.
We stop at the end of 10, don't we?
Yeah, that's right. Great. Thank you. So, let's go over what we've just read here. In number, for those who are walking in, these are what we're reading here in the Bible, Numbers 13. So, how does Numbers 13 start off?
God telling Moses to send the men to spy out the land.
Okay.
This land that he's giving.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about that. To spy out the land. Let's talk about if it means to spy, like what we think of. Language is always morphing and evolving. And since we're speaking in English now, English does too. The word in Hebrew for to spy out is latur.
Is what?
Latur. The root is tav vavresh. So it's a
lachu or tur.
Latur. Yeah.
That's all.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm not sure. Trying to remember. Tayar, you know, today tourist.
Mm-hmm. It's
related, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I always understood that this word spy was linked to the word scout, which would be something like.
Yeah, yeah, no, I think scout is a good way to.
Is almost better than.
Yeah, because
spying has got all sorts of implications of Mossad and.
Right. Right. I mean, they're related, right? Spy and to scout. Because scouts went ahead of armies And if they caught a scout, they would kill the scout because they would report information back to the invading army. So it's like the spy. But yeah, the idea is to look out, to see, to gather information. And anyways, it's just funny to think about tourists today who come to Israel. And you're to explore. Yeah, to explore, or you're gathering information on your tour of the land of Israel.
But it's also, it's a very Christian thing to say, I've come to spy out the land, like you, when you're thinking of, and
charismatically, maybe. Yeah.
Charismatically, yeah. Maybe, yeah. But Christians would say that at Ben-Gurion when they're being interrogated by, you know, Israeli officials, and then they would get interrogated much more rigorously after saying something like that. And, you know, I just remember growing up, my parents more than once having me say, yeah, you can't use language like that.
It just depends, because when I came, it was nothing to do with being Christian. I had been called to come here, and I just told people somewhere else, I need to go and spy out the land. You know, it was practical things, like getting an apartment and things like that.
I think you even use it as a
Well, it's a metaphor now, right, from Western civilization that's come from the Bible.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes, it's great.
But,
it's interesting, Nicole said explore, so, and I think that's really quite good too.
Corey said it. But to
explore
is very much definitely in this same category.
And when you explore, in this instance here, but in any instance, you might go in and find the whole thing terribly overwhelming. If you think about in the natural, the tourist who comes in, either they're coming in full of hallelujahs and, you know, isn't it beautiful, milk and honey and whatever, or you get caught up in the most god-awful traffic jams and, you know, the heat is unbelievable, the air conditioning doesn't work,
yep.
The place you're staying with has got cockroaches. I mean, there's endless possibilities for it being terrible.
Not for staying with you.
No, of course not.
So I wanted to bring up a couple examples where La Torre is used in the Bible.
Yeah.
It's used all over this section that we're reading today, chapter 13 and 14. But it's also like in Numbers 10, 33, a couple chapters earlier, Numbers 10, 33. So they set out from the mountain of the Lord, and they traveled for 3 days. The Ark of the Covenant of the Lord went before them during those 3 days to find them a place to rest. And so where it says to find them a place to rest is La Torre there. So
I've got to search out.
Yeah, exactly. Search out. And the later on, like when you get to Ecclesiastes, for example, let's go to, say, the beginning of Ecclesiastes, chapter 1. I'm not an expert in the development of the Hebrew language, but Ecclesiastes Kohelet is a late book. We call it late biblical Hebrew. And the language is evolving. And so here, La Torre is used by the writer of Ecclesiastes, chapter 1, verse 13. It says, I decided to carefully and thoroughly examine all that has been accomplished on the earth. What do your translations have there for 13?
To study
and explore. Now, yeah, that's more literal there. Anybody else have a different translation?
To sit
and to search out. And in Hebrew, it's Venatati et libi lidrosh velator bechokma. I'm given, you know, my heart to lidrosh, however you want to translate that, to like investigate or to examine, and lator. They're basically synonyms here, the two of them. Like we get the word midrash from lidrosh, right? And that comes in rabbinic tradition to be this kind of drasha, this thing that you pull from the text of your investigation into the text. It's a special reading.
It any sermon could be rash.
Exactly. And but
it's, God, I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom.
Yeah. So there, search out is latour. It's the word we're talking about here. And so then in chapter 2 of Ecclesiastes, verse 3, it says, I thought deeply about the effects of indulging myself. And in Hebrew, it's like, what do you have there for I thought deeply? Ecclesiastes, chapter 2, verse 3. What do you have there?
To hold on.
What, you have the same thing? Nicole, what do you got? No. Sorry. Embracing thought? Is that what you have?
I've got search in my mind.
My mind guides me with wisdom?
Still.
Okay.
My God, I search my heart.
Okay, thank you. That's better. So it is the same word there. I search my heart. All right, so your translation is definitely connect the word search to our word for spy or explore, search.
That's funny. My mind guides me.
Two, three? If we go to also chapter 7 of Ecclesiastes, 25, what do you have there? 7:25.
So I turned my mind to understand, to investigate, and to search out wisdom.
Okay, so there you have, was it search out? Or investigate, maybe.
My heart to
know, to
search and seek
out
wisdom.
Yeah. So anyways, it's fascinating if you're into looking at words to see how that kind of plays out down the road, latour, to it goes from, I mean, it's the same idea. You're going in and you're looking, you're trying to find information, which is exactly what happens. What does Moses command them to do in their search? What are all the parameters he gives to the 12 spies or 12 explorers, 12 scouts? Right, but what's he want to know? Chapter 13, Numbers 13, yeah. What about the land does Moses want to know?
What it's like.
And what the people
are like, and is it good to live there?
Yes. So is the land good or bad? Are the people a lot or weak? Or
few or many,
or a lot, or...
Yeah. What's the soil like? That's an interesting one.
Right. What's the
trees?
Are they developed, or are they cavemen, right? Do they have actual cities, or do they have...
No, are the cities inhabited? Are they like camps or strongholds?
Yeah, so are they developed?
Yeah.
So it's quite a task he's given them. So, so they're going in. Now, I noticed something here in verse 2. So we're back in Numbers 13. Verse 2. Who is he picking from these tribes? Yeah, the leaders. I don't remember this from my memory of growing up with these 12 people, but they're leaders, you know, Nasi. Like today, it's what we use for the president of Israel. Even though it's a ceremonial post, it's still it's a high term. Like later on, after the time of Jesus, when the rabbis, the sages that have now gathered up north near Nazareth, they're in Tzipori, Sepphoris, in that area, and the first Judah Hanasi, you've heard of him. He's kind of like the guy who collects the Mishnah and writes it down. He's called Judah Hanasi, which is the term here.
But where is Reuben Rivlin, you say, is a ceremonial title. Our president.
Oh, today, right, today. Right, sure.
Yeah, this is not ceremonial. These are the leaders of the of each tribe, as far as we know.
Yeah,
and
like
in such a way.
If you look at when Nasi is used in other parts of the Bible, it's connected to chiefs or rulers. In Ezekiel, it's what he calls Tzidkiyahu, the last king of Judah.
Yeah.
He calls him a Nasi. It's used for the future Messiah, Davidic king. The leaders who come back under Cyrus, called Nasi. So it's definitely not a minor term. It's a significant term. So that kind of makes this whole thing that much more scandalous, in that these 10 who rebel, they really are rebelling, because it's like a conspiracy of leaders.
It's also so different from today, where our leaders are more protected, like they have their own set of here, these are the people themselves going on. It's just much more of a tangible,
you're saying
they're the ones doing it, they're actually the ones doing it.
Right, they're leading. Right, right. Yeah, so anyways, it makes me look at these 12 guys as significant players in the political machinations of the Israelites. You know, they're the serious leaders here of the 12 tribes.
It's almost sad, really, because they may have been chosen to lead the people, help the people in their progress, and here they are doing the opposite.
Well, right. If we could argue for their side, they would probably say, but we think we are leading by saying this is not...
We're being responsible.
That's true.
That's
true.
We
haven't
voted for that. Well, the other thing is what they told us the truth.
Which is... Right.
There were
giants
there.
Yeah.
Right.
So they were giving a realistic picture. The problem was a lack of faith, actually.
Yeah.
So they weren't lying.
No, that's true. That's good, actually. Yeah. But they hadn't the faith in God, had they? To say, well, if he's let us cross the Red Sea and he's let us do all this, what's this to him? Nothing, really.
Yeah.
That's
actually, it gets harder at home to all of us.
Yeah, that's what's sad, really.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know if it's appropriate at all, but I keep thinking of all the stuff we've been talking about recently about David and Goliath. And I kept thinking about, whereas with David and with Goliath, the punchline is to have the right slingshot to bring down the enemy. And in a way here, it's exactly the same, except that the slingshot becomes the intercession of Joshua and so on. To the enemy is not so much defeating the Anak, it's so much as defeating the lack of faith.
Ultimately, we're our own worst enemy.
Yeah.
It's not the giant, right?
Yeah.
If you look at the Bible, it's about our hearts.
Right.
It's about sin, or... We are the ones who slow God down or cause God's plans to be thwarted. We do it most of the time if you look at the stories. It's so hard. Let's look at those instructions that Moses gave them. Numbers 13. We just went over them in verse 17 and on. We talked about it. They're going to go look, and what else are they supposed to do besides look? Right, that's all looking, but they're also supposed to take the fruit. That was another instruction. Take from the fruit.
Also before that, it's be of good courage and bring some fruit back from the land. I wonder why that courage comes in before we have to go bringing the fruit back.
Yeah, it's very interesting. You point that out, Gemma. Hit Chazek, that you be courageous and take some of the fruit. And this reminds me of the whole book of Joshua. be strong and courageous. It's like a chorus that repeats itself often in that book,
yeah.
And it's associated with Joshua. And
Joshua's going into the land.
Yeah.
And you've got to have the courage to go in every place and where your foot shall tread, I've given unto you. It's not today's courage, but it's there. And so here, you better have courage before you go take down their vines or whatever it is that you're stepping back.
So it's a little ominous. It's kind of saying, yes, go into the land, the Lord's given it to you, but you still have to have courage.
Right.
It's not going to be easy. It's
right.
You have to overcome your fears.
And although the word is courage is chazak, is it? Which is be strong, really.
Yeah, it's a heat pile.
Is it the same as, is it linked in any way to having faith?
I don't know. I did one time do a study of be strong and courageous, and it appeared often in Joshua, and it seemed to be connected to obeying God's commandments. That they were tied together, like obedience, in other words. The whole concept to obey God. Okay, so they go in, and I mentioned this last Shabbat in the sermon. Where do they start, and where does it look like they're ending or going all the way north? Yeah, somewhere, Lavo Hamat is up near Damascus. But maybe it's talking about on the way to Damascus. It's not exactly clear. But what is the one city that is very clear in this passage that they stop and they...
Hebron.
Mm-hmm. And why is that interesting?
It's the southern tip of Judea or west.
Right. They start down here in the past, I guess in the Negev. They go up and they go along the mountains. And Hebron is down there in the southern part, like you said. And what did they do in Hebron? What does it say? That's where the giants are. And then there's the Valley of Eshkol, which I think is over here towards the coast. But who ends up living in Hebron? Caleb. That's his inheritance. You remember that? In Judges and the end of Joshua, it talks about that's where Caleb goes. And so how very appropriate, because he's a believer. He's the one with faith. And
the dry land will turn into springs. Right, he gives springs to his daughter-in-law. Yeah.
Right. So that's kind of neat to see. So verse 26, they come back. They come back to the people. And they showed them the fruit of the land. What were the three fruits that they showed them? Numbers 13. Grapes, figs, pomegranates. And we all know those three fruit come in what time of the season?
Summer.
Late in the summer. Yeah.
Aren't they part of the Sheba?
Yes.
Minim.
Yeah.
So are they around Sukkot?
Yeah, it's leading up to Sukkot. Right. And nowadays, with Israel's innovation, they basically can grow anything at any time of the year. No, you see pomegranates throughout the whole year almost. No, not right now, but they're getting ready to come in again.
Yeah. So for our wedding, we were planning to have pomegranates as a symbolic fruit.
Yeah, but that was July.
That was July. We couldn't find them anywhere. So we had these cherries instead.
So the what's the good thing about the land that they bring back in their investigation, and what's the bad thing about the land?
The fruit
is the good thing.
The news of what they saw was the bad.
Yeah, the people, right? They're scared of the people, right?
Yeah, but the food was all right. The milk and honey.
Yeah.
But the people.
The people.
Is it the people or started saying, this is what they saw. Did they see it? Is it only the people, or was there a whole thing about their living in big cities and whatever? I mean,
yeah, their cities were fortified, but the people were powerful, they saw.
Yeah.
And they saw the sentence of Allah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something to, I don't know, just kind of process, think about this morning. You think often about, like Paul talks about, our battle is not with flesh and blood. What is flesh and blood? People. Like, so our battle is not with the relationships of, because let's admit it, most of the problems in the world is because of our human relationships. Because we don't get along, whether for whatever the reason is, it's flesh and blood. And then Paul says it's, you know, it's a spiritual battle. It's not flesh and blood.
What's cool about that phrase, flesh and blood? It's a rabbinic phrase for a human. It's not found in the Bible.
In the Hebrew scripture.
It's not found in the Hebrew Bible.
Yeah.
We have blood and we have bones. Bone of my bone, flesh of
my flesh.
We never have flesh and blood together. That's a rabbinic idiom and all these are.
Oh, yeah.
Good. Anyways, let's keep going. And
so, can I just
yeah,
Shara, say what you're saying is Paul is using a rabbinic idiom when he says it.
Yes.
Thank you.
Or you could say they're using a. Or it depends what you define. Yeah. Within Jewish, yeah, practice.
So we have it recorded in the New Testament, and we have it recorded in rabbinic literature later on. And it's not from the Bible, so you see that Paul is part of this world.
Right.
And he's thinking in Hebrew.
Right.
Because it's a Hebrew phrase, it's not a Greek phrase.
So who's the person who says, look, we can do this? Caleb, right? Caleb is the one. And by the way, we might as well just talk about his name. Go ahead, Danny. I know you've been studying it lately.
Nice.
So if you think, yeah, if you think of Caleb, we're not talking about Kelev, like a dog, but Kelev, as a heart.
The form e goes back to proto Hebrew would be Kal. It's different.
It's a different word.
Where Kelev has a long vowel under the second syllable. So it goes back to Lev, like heart.
The reason why I bring this up.
It's made up of a prefix and another word.
Yeah. The reason why I bring this up is because sometimes Hebrew, pseudo Hebrew teachers like to say, you know, Kalev is related to dog, and because a dog is a faithful animal, but
yeah, no.
That's just super midrash.
You know, it's based on not understanding etymology, or not studying etymology.
I have to confess, this is the Chinese year of the dog. And I got very excited by the whole idea. So I repent publicly of my excitement about it. But even so, if it's kalev to do with your heart,
right.
I still think there is a link. And the Chinese can rejoice in the year of the lamb. You guys
Chinese. Yeah, so, no, you can always say anything. You know, a lot of sermons are kind of based off of What's the
eisegesis?
Where you kind of come up with something from the text that it's not actually saying.
That's
what a midrash basically is. Yes, I know. If you're good, the better of a midrash it is, the closer it is to the text. You're right, but there's a lot of wacky ones too that are just like, well, it's kind of close, and so here it is. Have fun with it. So, yeah. Right.
Like Ichabod in the text.
Ichabod in English.
Ichabod. So E means not, Kabod is glory. So you can play on a name like the glory left Israel, and that's why the name is Ichabod. But actually, his name fits into the type of name that was used by Canaanites. There was just a prefix E. You can find this kind of name many places. And maybe it was a shortening for Ish or something else.
else, but if it's a name pattern and it has nothing to do with the prefix e, that means not in Hebrew. But never mind, it fits nicely and you can interpret his name in light of that after the fact.
It's like Moshe's name. It's not a Hebrew name. Moshe, even though the Bible says it means because he was drawn out, like, is it Mashach? That it's an Egyptian name you have with, what's his name?
It means son.
It means son. It literally means Ben in Egyptian, which makes sense because he grew up with Egyptians, you know. I mean, of course, his, you know, the whole thing with his Hebrew
and
mom,
and
but...
play on the name. It's a beautiful understanding because you can see things based on life events. You see how the name gets a new meaning.
Right.
So it's not a technical connection, but it's real in the sense that it's poetry.
Right. Just
so
like my name.
If we can call
it... Like my name, Gemma. What's my name?
Well, your name's Gary, but heaven knows what it really is.
But in Hebrew, Ger, right?
Oh.
Think about it.
He's a foreign resident.
I'm a foreign resident here.
Yeah.
A Ger.
A Ger.
Geri. Okay.
What is Gary's full name? I mean, what is it, Gerald or something? I mean, what are you actually...
No, it's from English. Like, it means like spear carrier.
No, I didn't mean that. I mean, is Gary a real name?
Yeah, it's my real name.
Oh, I thought maybe...
It's not short for me.
Yeah.
Oh, it's short.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Anyways.
So people sometimes start at poetry and work back.
Yeah.
Like, they sit, like they'll see signs and everything, like... It was my... I played my birthday digits on the lottery, and I realize now that that's what, you know, God wanted me to do that. That's why he had me born on this day, so that I can become a millionaire. And then, and you can string
pearls,
a narrative of whatever kind you like. And yeah, it's poetic, but it's not always related to the truth.
So what Sharon is saying is you start with what the text says, and if you want to poetize it,
but
you don't start with the poetry and work backwards.
It's one of these things where we don't know everything, but we just try to be a little more careful with coming up with crazy ideas from the text, because, you know, this is, I think sometimes people are a little too free with it. So that's what we're trying to say.
Some people really do put their money on the lottery.
Based on, and I really do believe that it meant there was also a dog.
Yeah, no. So I think at the bottom line, it's about having faith. So.
I'm also wondering why that Caleb is not Jewish.
See, he's from the tribe of Judah, so I don't know if you can find, like, if.
He was some known outsider.
Anyway.
It's more hearsay. Yeah.
We'll keep pushing on here. So they're scared of the people, but they like the fruit. Okay, and let's go to Fort. And they said, we look like grasshoppers compared to them. Chapter 14, the people are crying all night. And what's the bottom line that we read here in these first 10 verses of chapter 14? Yes. And what are the two things that they're now proposing to do?
Choose another leader.
Yep. Choose another leader.
And go back.
And stone Moses. Verse 10.
Oh, yeah.
Moses and all the other people. Right, so it's gotten pretty bad here. It's not just like I disagree, it's like I'm going to erase your opinion. And so what happens later, which will be next Shabbat, which we're not going into, you could argue, well, they had it coming to them.
She's right about Caleb, Numbers 32. Caleb ben Yefuneh, Ha-Kenizzi.
Which verse?
Verse 12.
Okay, Numbers 32, verse 12.
Caleb's father, Yefuneh, was a Kenizzite.
So the question is how did he become part of the tribe of Judah? from?
They have
familial. They married in with each other.
I think they are associated, if not directly, with Midianites in a trade bond. Kenaz and Kami are friends with Judah. Like in Judges 5, when Boaz and Barak, you know, they ask the Kenazite to leave.
So they won't kill him.
So they won't kill him. Like they have an alliance.
Yeah, it's an alliance.
But there's also a link spiritually, isn't there? Because we get every time we get Caleb, we always get that he wholly followed the Lord or something like that. I mean, there's always this. And
he had a different spirit.
He had a different spirit. I mean, whatever it is, that spirit, which is linked to
faith,
God himself, which is really what it's about. It's not about, you know.
So thank you for that, Rachel. That is a very important point to bring up. That Caleb comes from the Kenizzites.
Also in Joshua 14, verse 6, it mentions Caleb, Ben, Yehudah, and Kenizzi. So again, outside the numbers, you have
to say. He is an inheritance of the
land.
As a Garrett.
Yeah.
As a Kenizzi.
What Caleb?
All right.
It's like Rahab, right? The same thing.
Right. So let's go there. We don't have a lot of time left, but the Haftarah is, so maybe this is our link this morning. We go to Joshua chapter 2. Maybe we found it. Joshua 2. Let's read it. Go ahead, Nicole.
Together in your house, your father, mother, brothers,
tell this business about us?
I think she can meet over here.
Okay.
However, if you betray us, then this oath will no longer bind us in any way. I accept your terms, she replied, and she left the scarlet rope hanging from the window. The spies went up into the mountains and stayed there 3 days until the men who were chasing them had returned to the city after searching everywhere along the road without success. Then the two spies came down from the mountain and crossed the river and reported to Joshua all that had happened to them. The Lord will certainly give us the entire land, they said, for all the people over there are scared to death of us.
Great. Thank you. So, what are the connections here that are vital? What do you see?
The first one I saw was spy, but I can't find the famous word.
Yeah, it's a different word.
Here it's lachpor. It's to dig out the land.
In verse 2, it says to spy out, and it's lachpor. So, like, to dig out, but today also it's connected to investigate.
So what's the word in Hebrew here?
Lachpor.
Lachpor.
It's this. That's the root.
And it's, I don't know, I'm just going with my impression without doing a word study, but it seems like it's a little negatively connotated. Like it's investigating, but like
with the intent of using it against something.
It's digging out the dirt, you know, it's investigating that way. No, I mean, this is what the other side is accusing them of. It's not what they say they're doing, right? It's what the king says to Rahab.
It also talks about the meaning, this word there, Meraglim, Meraglim. And I think it's connected with feet, like walking.
Where's the Meraglim?
It's in verse 1.
Meraglim is one, verse 1, yeah.
Yeah. Shnaim Anashim Meraglim.
And.
Oh, I see. So that's another word. A Meraglim is also a spy, right?
Spy. And this is what Joseph accuses his brothers of when they come to Egypt. You're a bunch of spies. He uses it 6, 7, 8 times in Genesis 42. Calling them spies. It's the same word here. And you'll remember, ironically, in his whole fight with his brothers, Joseph and his 10 brothers at that point, that what do they accuse him of? Why do they ship him off to Egypt as a slave? What were they upset about, besides him being a spoiled brat? Well,
because he
kept
a check on him.
He kept coming. Check out. It says you go back and you give his father a
bath.
It's the same word that's used.
The debah.
It's the same word that's used of the 10 spies that go back to Moses. So it's interesting that Joseph kind of flips it on his brothers because he uses like projection on them. Like, you know, because they're not coming to spy for them, they just want some food. But he flips it on them to kind of like a little payback for saying that I was. Well, yes, he was being a spy for his father, but anyways.
Or a messenger, it depends how
you. I know, but he's bringing information,
yeah.
Bringing it back up. These guys are doing whatever they're doing, his brothers, so. Anyways.
Can you give me the verse?
For
where you've got this, the actual verse, where you've got this hapor word. I can't find
verse
it.
Verse 2.
Verse 2 and again in verse 3.
Joshua 2, 2. So Nicole, was it Nicole? Who brought up Rahab earlier?
I didn't.
Okay, so. Give us some more of what you're thinking.
Well, if Rahab joins into the house of Israel, and she was given an inheritance with Israel. And then she ends up in Jesus' genealogy.
Yeah.
In the same way, Caleb's ancestor was not an Israelite, but obviously was seconded to Israel and gets an inheritance with Judah, which is the tribe of the rulers. And so you see a similarity of faithful Gentiles who become part of Israel because of their faith.
I also see a connection with the testimony that they gave that the people draw courage from. Like at the end here, it's because of her words. It's her words that they take back. It's not that they have seen that. It's kind of like they're taking her testimony. And so her word as a foreigner somehow is still so esteemed.
They trusted it.
Yeah.
Even though she's a prostitute.
Yeah.
She was low on the totem pole of the society.
In some ways, maybe that's why they trusted her, because she has no reason to... Yeah, she
has no power.
Yeah, she has nothing to lose. She'll just tell the truth of what's really happening. Maybe.
Where did she hide him?
Mixed up with the flesh. Under the flesh.
So I find that an interesting connection to Numbers 13, because it says, you know, what are the things that they're impressed by? It's the produce of the land when the 10 spies come back. And it's in the produce of the land that they're hidden and they're protected, you know, from the king's
army. It's flax. Isn't it something you make cotton with?
When you make
cloth.
Yeah. Linen.
Right.
But some people eat flaxseed today.
Today they do. I think in the Bible they used it for linen and then feeding animals.
Yeah.
The stock. I'm not sure that they used it in food for people. But they definitely produced a lot of it.
Yeah.
Because I think cotton wasn't here so much, right? Linen is their main thing to make clothes out of besides wool.
So anyways, they're hidden inside the produce of the land, the two spies, and it's been pointed out often by people that, look, Joshua only sent two spies this time and not 12. And so that because there were only two faithful spies the first time, you only need to send two because...
But what is interesting is...
12 is too many.
It's also so much smaller space and distance.
Yeah.
And it says they go in secret this time, where the other time, when they come back and report, we were like locusts in their eyes. We were like grasshoppers in their eyes. That means that the people saw them and knew who they were. So this one, it says specifically they were sent in secret. So they're trying to like more blend in and not. It's not like this big delegation coming in like, oh, those are foreigners.
And what is flipped this time in the report?
What I think is so extraordinary is that Rahab basically tells the spies what their God has done. I mean,
And she never saw it.
What?
She's never seen it.
She's never seen it. She's heard what he's done and basically believed. In a way, when you look at the other side, I mean, here the spies...
They saw it.
The 12 spies, they knew exactly, they knew this is the land that God had given them. He'd already brought them out of Egypt. What an excitement. We've done this, so we were part of the whole story. And still they get scared.
Yeah.
Shit scared.
Yeah.
Whereas here, it's the other way around. They're going in, absolutely, really quite scared about things. They've got to be hidden, and who knows what's happening.
Yeah.
She's the one who says, well, it's okay. We're the ones who are scared because we know what your God can do.
Yeah, so that's also flipped.
Yeah,
like
it's a flip.
That the 10 spies brought back, we're scared because we're like grasshoppers. And then this time they bring back, they're scared because, in a sense, they're like grasshoppers in front of our God who does all these amazing things. So, very interesting. So... Anyway, we'll close this morning, and just kind of taking all of those different aspects of these two stories to heart,
of how God spoke then, and he continues to speak to us today. So, Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.